Southeast Radio's morning mix. Chat, news, and your views.
And a warm welcome to you as we welcome you along to the Wednesday edition of Southeast Radio's Morning Mix. Can I just remind you that our comment line number is very much open to you. Jim is taking our calls on 053 9145222. Shortly after 11, a County Wexford priest in an exclusive interview with the Morning Mix gives his view on the forthcoming same-sex referendum. Elsewhere in the programme, Wexford's Republic of Ireland International Kevin Doyle is on his way to pastures new. His destination is the USA. We hope to link up with him and ask him what his hopes for the future are as he heads off to join Colorado Rapids. But first off, on today's Morning Mix, 10 years ago, a young Wexford woman and her two children were desperately seeking help from social services. Sadly, no help was available. The bodies of Sharon Grace and her two children were found on Cat Strand on the borders of Wexford town. 10 years later, on today's edition of the Morning Mix, we pose the question, what, if anything, has changed? On Saturday, the 16th of April, 2005, a young Wexford mother committed an act of desperation that shocked the county and country.
It was unbelievable what happened. You know, you thought it was something you would only read about. It was something you never thought you would see in your own town, never mind in your own family.
28-year-old Sharon Grace from Barntown, just outside of Wexford town, sought out-of-hours help from a social worker. There was no help available at the time. Sharon, along with her daughters, 4-year-old Michaela and 3-year-old Abby, walked to Cat Strand, a stretch of water just minutes from Ely Hospital, where she sought the help. The next day, their bodies were found washed up on the shore.
And obviously, she didn't see another way out. So she walked in to the water with her and her children.
Now, 10 years later, we still don't have out-of-hours social work services in County Wexford. And Sharon's family believes a similar tragedy could happen again.
The thing about the 10 years on from the tragedy is that we don't seem to be after, from the health board's point of view, or any of the, we don't seem to be any further along the road.
Sharon Grace, who was 28 at the time of her death, was estranged from her partner Barry, but they continue to have a very close, loving relationship. Now, for the first time since the tragedy occurred, we retrace the final steps Sharon took with her two children before they died. Barry's mother, Alcee Grace, from outside of Ely Hospital, describes the type of person Sharon was.
She was very quiet. She had, I suppose, a kindness, and maybe, you know, I can see a smile that she had on her face, but, you know, she was a very private person.
Did you think she was troubled? Did you know she was troubled? Had you any insight into the way she was feeling?
Oh, no, none at all. There was, you know, no, there was no indication whatsoever.
And yet she came to this spot almost 10 years to the day, and she sought help. What's your own recollection of events as they unfolded?
Well, I didn't know about it till the next day, because obviously till the bodies were found. So I didn't know she was missing on the Saturday night, because, you know, Barry and the rest of the family were away that Saturday night. And it was just like a bad dream, I suppose, as it unfolded, that the bodies were found and that, you know, it didn't sink in, I suppose, really, with us. You know, your recollection of the fuss and the, it was just unbelievable. But it was a tragedy that happened, and the main thing about it was that she did go to look for help that she didn't receive.
She called in here to Ely Hospital, right beside where we are now.
And there wasn't help available. She was given, I think, phone number for the hospital or something, and but I think that just wasn't good enough.
Alcee was a loving grandmother to the two children, 4-year-old Michaela and 3-year-old Abby. She has fond memories of them both.
They were lovely children. They were very, one of them was quiet and the other one was more go around. But as I say, once they were, well-mannered, well-brought up, and they're very much missed by everyone in the family. And it's,
what do you miss about them?
You miss seeing them growing up, I suppose. You kind of think, I suppose, as a grandmother, I would think on days like when it would be communions or confirmations, and you'd see from the school that they went to, and you would think to yourself, well, that would have been their year to make it. You're going out with flowers to the Cat Strand. You're not going out with, you know, you're not looking at them opening their Christmas presents or things like that. You're just thinking at the different life stages they're at.
On Saturday, the 16th of April, Sharon took a taxi from home to Ely Hospital in Wexford Town. She was desperate for help and asked to see a social worker. Ely Hospital at the time was the area headquarters for social workers. However, the services were only available on weekdays during office hours. There was no one available to talk to her at that time.
It was on the Saturday that Sharon went out. Obviously, she was looking for help. She didn't get the help. And obviously, she didn't see another way out. So she walked in to the water with her and her children. She was a loving mother whose life revolved around her children. And she must have been in some state. It's just simply, you know, it was unbelievable. And I suppose that's the only way I could describe it.
We've now moved from Ely Hospital, and we're now very close to the Cat Strand. And Elsie has just stepped out of the car, and one can sense that this is bringing a lot of raw emotion back to her. Elsie, just describe where we are at the moment now.
At the moment, we've just come into the entrance there onto the Cat Strand itself, and this would have been the way of where Sharon walked on that night.
We then moved closer to the area of Cat Strand, where Sharon, in desperation, walked into the water with her two children.
You know, but I mean, if you think of it here, like you were talking about a night in April, and I suppose it was a bad, wet, windy night, and you were coming down here with herself and the two kids.
Right, where we are at the moment, we've just walked down a little laneway. It's very bleak, it's very windy, it's very blustery, and have you thought about what thoughts were going through her mind at this point in time?
Her mind must have been held to her that night, because, I mean, that's the only way you could describe coming down here with two children. And it wasn't the Sharon we knew. It wasn't Sharon herself. It was a different person.
Have you thought long and hard about what happened to you?
I have, and it's funny, because this is the one place that I find that I feel this is the place where I find that there's peace where they're concerned. I find I get peace when I come, you know, it's the little shrine that we have out here is very, very special to Barry and to the rest of the family. It's the place that we come on their birthdays, on Christmas, on days, and you know, as we get to where we're coming up fairly close now to where
she stepped into the water.
Water. And I mean, you know, it's just so hard that she left her handbag here, and her and her two children went into the water.
An independent report by the Child Death Review Group, commissioned by the Minister for Health of the day and published in June 2012, found there is still no out-of-hours social work services in County Wexford, and a similar tragedy to this could happen again. The report examines the deaths of 196 children known to the HSE during the 10-year period from January 2000 to April 2010. It includes the deaths of 36 children in care, 32 children and young people in aftercare, and 128 children who were known to the Child Protection Services. Four County Wexford children appear in the report, meaning they had come into contact with social work services before they died. They are listed anonymously and are only given a number. Among the four are Sharon Grace's two young daughters, Michaela and Abby. Sharon's mother-in-law, Alcy Grace, is still very emotional. That's a detailed response from the HSE. Earlier this morning, I brought to the attention of Dr. Paul Kern from the Kern Medical Centre in the Fife Wexford the piece we've just broadcast, and I also showed him the full statement from the HSE. And then I put it to him, have things changed?
To be honest, Alan, in my opinion, no, unfortunately, things haven't really progressed on the ground. I think we still have a huge gap in that there is no social worker availability and out of hours, so therefore they're only available 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. Outside of these hours, either in the evening or night time or at weekends, there is no social work acute service available. I think this is unfortunate because, as you know, often these emergencies or acute incidences occur in the out of hours time. It's not often during the day, and we unfortunately on the ground have had no change or improvement in these services in the last 10 years.
So regarding acute mental health services out of hours at the weekend. Good morning to you, Kevin. How are you?
Morning, I'm good. Thank you very much. How are you?
Footballer extraordinaire about to head from the Wolverhampton Wanderers pastures to Colorado Rapids. Kevin, it's a move that's been on the cards for a while, but you managed to stay out the season with Wolves. You stayed with them. Sadly for them, they fell short in the playoff situation. How do you feel about the move to Colorado now?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's been going on for a while. Basically, I was out there in February, had a look around, and I was meant to be joining them for the start of their season, which was the middle of March, but Wolves were keen to keep me till the end of the season. So, in the end, both parties were happy with it, and just can't wait to get started. It's been dragging on a while. So
when are you off? When are you actually over there to play?
I am going on Saturday.
And are you bringing the family with you? Because you've recently had another little baby, haven't you?
Yeah, we've two now. No, they're going to come in a month's time. I'm just waiting on a house and stuff out there to be sorted. And then they're going to join me in about a month's time. So, a month in a hotel room waiting on them, which not ideal, but it should go quickly.
Look, I know down through your career you've worked with some very interesting managers, even beginning in your own career here in Wexford and on to the League of Ireland and then, of course, across channel to Reading and elsewhere. I believe, by all accounts, you've got quite a colourful manager awaiting you in Colorado. What do you know of him?
I had dinner with him, and he's a really nice guy.
Just remind us who he is again, will you? Because
Pablo Mastroni, he's a former USA international. He's like 70 or 80 caps for America. But if you Google him and look up some images of him as a manager, he's a little different. Likes to wear a Dickie Bow on the touchline and has a handlebar moustache. he's massively into his soccer and very passionate about it. But he's just a bit eccentric when it comes to his dress. But it seems a very, very nice guy.
Now, late yesterday afternoon, I spoke to Father Richard Lawless. He's administrator in St. Aidan's Cathedral in Enniscorthy. Been a lot of interest in Father Richard Lawless in recent days because of a posting on his Facebook page. First of all, I asked him to tell us a little bit about who he is.
Well, I'm from Ballygarrett in North County Wexford, and I have two sisters, Helen and Betty, and they're both married and they both have families. And so I have three nieces and a nephew, and I'm working in St. Aidan's Cathedral Parish in Enniscorthy for the last 9 years, and I've been administrator there for the last 2.5 years.
So you've utilised social media, and in particular Facebook. You're a regular user.
Yes, I'm a regular user of Facebook. I think it's a wonderful way to communicate. Isn't everyone on Facebook now, Alan? Mm-hmm.
And everything was moving along swimmingly till all of a sudden you put up the posting, a logo, Yes Equality 2015. Why did you make this posting?
Well, the first thing I have to say about it is it's entirely my own view. I'm not, speaking on behalf of anybody else, but this is my own view. And I suppose I want to say that I'm ordained 27 years in June of this year. And over the course of that time, my pastoral work, as you'll appreciate, would have brought me into contact with a broad range of people. And I've met people at baptisms, weddings, funerals, and I suppose everything in between over the course of 27 years. Now, among the people I've met are, of course, gay people, and they're always, in my sharing with them, I've tried, like I do with in my communication with everyone else, always to find words of encouragement for them as they celebrate their joys in life, and indeed also, of course, as they wrestle with the difficulties of life. And so in relation to the referendum, I suppose I want to let the message go out there that there are people of faith on both sides of this the debate, the yes side and the no side, because it has sort of come across a little bit in the communications that the people of faith are only on the no side, and that's not the case.
Has it put you into conflict with other members of the clergy, or for that matter, have you found yourself in a conflict situation?
No, not at all. These are my own personal views, and people are well used to people having individual points of view and sharing them. And we live in a free democratic society, and it's a good thing to share your own views.
Why do you think Pope Francis has been helpful to you in this?
Well, you know, I'm greatly inspired by Pope Francis, because I feel that he's begun a whole new period of openness in the life of the church. He's a marvellous way, as you know, with words. And I think his statement in relation to gay people was very important.
What did he say?
He said, "Who am I to judge them if they're seeking the Lord in good faith?" And you know, Alan, these are very powerful words. And we haven't heard these kind of words from a pope before. And I think they affirm and encourage gay people in all our parishes to continue all the good, kind and caring work they do. I consider at this point in time that as a citizen of our republic, when I vote, I have a responsibility to promote the welfare of all people. So I think that includes people of faith as well as people of no faith. And you know, that's another point we can take from Pope Francis, because he has initiated a dialogue with people of no faith, and that's a very important communication as well. So I'm fully committed to the sacramental life of the church, but I know that that's not for everybody.
Look, I've asked you the question about where you stand with the bishop and where you stand with your fellow clerics. You've given your response that it's very much your individual opinion. But what about the no voters? How may they react to what you are saying? Because they will see you as a member of the church, and the general feeling is the church is encouraging people to vote no. So what is your reaction to people who are voting no?
Well, of course.
Are you concerned with their reaction?
Of course, I'm very concerned. My life as a priest means that I'm always concerned, morning, noon and night, with people and their concerns, because a priest's life is totally wrapped up in people. And I'd hate to think that any words of mine would cause pain or offence to anyone. And I certainly hope that this is not going to be the case. We have to respect the right of others to hold opposing views to us. And so I'm all for encouraging others to voice their views, but I'd like to think that I'd voice my views in a respectful way, and knowing that when this referendum is over, we're all going to be called to accept the results of the referendum, whatever they might be, and we're all going to have to live in harmony with each other. And so I think that's why we have to all be very careful. We have to be moderate in what we say. And that being said, of course, the referendum is asking us to choose between yes and no. And there's no maybe option in the referendum, so we have to make a choice. And the word no is, it's only a small little word, the word no, Alan. But, you know, in this context, I think it's a very hard word to give. And I honestly don't think it's the right word. Me personally, I just don't feel it's the right word for me to give. So for all the people hoping for the chance to marry their loved one, I consider that if my pencil strikes the no box on my ballot sheet, I'll be robbing them, really.
Of their dreams.
Of their dreams, yes. Their dreams of a life of equality and respect.